There's a woman named Pauline Bartels, who is a naturalized American citizen. She originally came from the town of Atuam in Ghana, Africa. Now she works, she lives in Washington, D.C. She works in the Ghana embassy there in Washington, D.C. She's a secretary there. And, you know, she's just your basic sort of American citizen. She drives an old Honda. She does her own laundry, you know, lives humbly. But in 2009, her life took a very unexpected turn. The king of Atuam died at the age of 90 that year. Now, the elders of that area, the way they choose the next king is they have a really weird ritual where they take some alcohol and they pour it on the ground, and then they start reading all the names of all the relatives of the deceased king. And when some steam rises, whoever's name they happen to be reading at that moment, that's the next king. It turns out that Pauline Bartels was a relative of the deceased king, and her name was chosen. And of course, they contacted her to inform her that she was going to be the next king, and she said, "But I'm a woman, how can I be the king?" And they said, "Doesn't matter, your name, you are now the new king." And so she went back to Ghana, and she was carried through the streets of the city on a litter, you know, just like they used to do, and it was given a big, heavy gold crown, and she is now the king. King Peggy, they call her. And she still lives in Washington, D.C., and works in the embassy there, but she periodically will go back to Ghana, where she will have her own personal chef and a chauffeur, and she owns a palace. She has a palace there and 1,000 acres of land because she is now King Peggy. Can you imagine something like that happening to you? Today I want to look at a passage of Scripture in which we see something happen that is just almost the exact opposite of that. Instead of suddenly going from being nobody to being somebody, we're talking about the greatest somebody of all time essentially looking like a nobody. The story is found in John 13, 1 through 17. And in this story, we're going to find out that oddly, this step down that this person took, and of course it's Jesus, this is church after all, was infinitely farther than the step up that Pauline took. And we're also going to find out that oddly, for us, taking that same step down actually turns out to be a step up. John 13 through 17 are the recollections of the Apostle John of the last night of Jesus' life. When Jesus spent a long time giving his final instructions to his disciples, this was kind of like, I like to think of it, if you're in a military unit and you're going to go on some mission, they will have a final briefing going over, these are the final facts we need to know before we go on this mission. This was the final briefing for the disciples of Jesus. So these are important words for us to listen to. So we're going to look at verses 1 through 17, John 13. Reads like this: "It was just before the Passover festival. Jesus knew that the hour had come for him to leave this world and go to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. The evening meal was in progress, and the devil had already prompted Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot, to betray Jesus. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power, and they had come from God and was returning to God." Oh, okay. Never mind. "So he got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing, and wrapped a towel around his waist. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around him. He came to Simon Peter, who said to him, 'Lord, are you going to wash my feet?' Jesus replied, 'You do not realize now what I'm doing, but later you will understand.' 'No,' said Peter, 'you will never wash my feet.' Jesus answered, 'Unless I wash you, you have no part with me.' 'Then, Lord,' Simon Peter replied, 'not just my feet, but my hands and my head as well.' Jesus answered, 'Those who have had a bath need only to wash their feet. Their whole body is clean, and you are clean, though not every one of you.' For he knew who was going to betray him, and that was why he said not every one was clean. When he had finished washing their feet, he put on his clothes, Return to his place. Do you understand what I've done for you? He asked him. You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that is what I am. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. I have set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. Very truly, I tell you, no servant is greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. Now that you know these things, you'll be blessed if you do them. So what we see in this passage is, first of all, Jesus pictured his work in an amazing act. Jesus knew the time had come for him to leave this world and go to the Father. He's about to die, and he knows that. And it says here that he loved his disciples to the end. So right to the end of his life, he's expressing love to them, and you see that in this passage. Now, in Luke's record of the events of this night, Luke tells us something that helps us understand a little bit about why Jesus took the particular action that he did here. In Luke 22, verse 24, it says, a dispute among them, the disciples, arose among them, the disciples, as to which of them was considered to be the greatest. So here we are, on more than one occasion, Jesus had taught his disciples that to be leaders in his kingdom, they needed to humble themselves and become servants. Clearly, they had not grasped that message, because here we are, once again, Jesus, the last night of his life, and they're arguing about the hierarchy among them. Who's better than whom, and who's more popular, you know? Who's the big guy? There's a little bit of that's understandable. Because, you know, how do things work in the world? Well, the way things work in this world is that we continually rank ourselves. Everybody does it. We continually compare. Am I better than this person in this way? Is that person better than me? Where do I, you know? And there's this continual thing. We're finely tuned to where we fit on the social ladder, whatever context we might find ourselves. And frankly, we're hypersensitive to any hint that maybe we don't matter much. Maybe we're unimportant. A few months ago, Lori and I took a trip that began with something that is not listed in that song, My Favorite Things, you know, Raindrops on Roses and Whiskers on Kittens. Well, flying out of LAX, not in that song, you know. Not one of my favorite things. So we had to fly out of LAX, and so we thought, well, you know what, we'll just drive up there and park our car up there in some long-term parking. And we found a good deal at a hotel right there on Century Boulevard, just outside the entrance to the airport. So they had underground parking, so we'll park there. So we went up there, and we parked, and then we walked up, but we weren't quite sure where do you get the shuttle to the airport. And so we asked one of the hotel employees, oh, you just go right outside the front entrance to the hotel. There's a place there. We go out, sure enough, there's a place, you know, shuttle, airport shuttle. You stand right there and wait for the shuttle. So we go out there. We got our luggage, and we're standing there, and there are a few other people waiting for the shuttle. And I said, should be along in just a couple minutes. Okay. So we waited, and we waited, and we waited, and the shuttle didn't come, but something interesting happened. Some police officers showed up. They pulled up, and we thought, well, what in the world? What is this about, you know? And they get out of their cars, and they didn't do anything. They just kind of stood there, and they're standing around, obviously waiting for something. And so, you know, we wondered what's going on, and I kind of said, hey, what's going on here? And somebody, and well, it turned out it's L.A. They were having the Emmys that night in town, and some celebrity was coming. And the police were there to provide security for the celebrity, the important person who was coming. And, you know, after a while, we're thinking, where's our shuttle? And finally, we asked, you know, we're here for the airport shuttle. Where's the shuttle? And they said, oh, well, because we have someone important coming, the shuttle is around the side of the hotel, over in an alley. So all of you nobodies, you got to walk, schlep your baggage around to the side of the hotel where the shuttle is, and sure enough, it's there. You sort of get this message, oh, here's someone who matters. They're important. The police show up to protect them. You walk around to the alley, you know, you're nobody. Man, you know, it's a little bit like, I'd rather be somebody, you know? And we all sort of have that sense, and, you know, that's kind of a funny, not, you know, I mean, we don't, that's kind of how life is. But everywhere in this world, it's like we all want to matter. The disciples did too. And so here they are, you know, arguing about wanting to be somebody, because you know what? These guys, they were a bunch of nobodies. They'd never been anybody in their lives until Jesus came along and chose them. They had never been chosen for anything until Jesus did. Jesus chose them. He picked them out. Man, that felt good. Because, you know, Jesus, they were very clear. This is not just some normal human being. This guy, he's got divine power. And they're thinking, he's going to be the king of the world. And we are going to be in his administration. We're going to be somebody. This is great. But now, the problem is, there were 12 of them. You know, and that's really cool to be somebody and be sort of important. But frankly, you know, in the president's cabinet, you know, how many of the cabinet members can you name? Well, we all know Kathleen Sebelius, don't we? House and Human Services, Health and Human Services. We know her name because of the, you know, health insurance debacle. But you know the name of the Secretary of Commerce? Secretary of the Interior? In case you didn't know, it's Penny Pritzker and Sally Jewell. Nobody knows them. And the disciples are thinking, what if I get, you know, housing and urban development? Nobody will know my name. And so they're arguing, who's on top? So Jesus says, all right, you guys still have not gotten the message here, so I'm going to act it out for you. Now, what happens in this passage is a familiar story. And that the very familiarity sometimes, I think, can sap it of its impact to a degree. You have to think about how astounding this act was when Jesus takes off his outer robe and you know, puts on the towel around his waist and gets down on his hands and knees and washes the grimy feet of his own disciples. Who does that? I know it was the custom in the day to wash the feet of guests, but it was a nasty job. You know, it's worse than giving pedicures, okay? And so it was reserved for the low man on the totem pole. The lowest slave in the household got that job. Now, in this particular instance, there's no host, and so there's no host servant to do the job. And so now you're faced with a problem. How are we going to get people's feet washed? Because they're pretty dirty. What are we going to do here? And everybody's sort of looking around going, well, I'm not going to be me, because you know what? If we're arguing about who's on top, who's most important, the guy who does that is admitting that he's the least important. So I'm not doing that. So here's the thing. In that room, who was the most important person? Jesus. That's right. It's church. He's always the right answer, right? Jesus. Oh, okay. Okay. Yes, Jesus is the Lord of the universe. Who did the disciples think was most important? It was Jesus. They knew that. You know, they knew that crowds of people, thousands of people, weren't coming to hear them speak. They were coming to hear Jesus speak. They knew that they weren't ready to be the Messiah to take over. It was Jesus. He was the most important person in the room, and everybody knew it. They were only arguing about who was second most important. And yet it is the person who is most important, and everybody knew it, who does the most menial job possible. The lowest of the low. Jesus does that. So opposed to how the world works, isn't it? Do the most important people do the least important jobs? The most menial jobs? No. I mean, let's think about it. Is there any chance that LeBron James or Carrie Underwood or Tom Brady is going to go to someone's house and clean their toilets? That does not happen. Not in this world. And yet, that's what Jesus did. Now, you got to imagine this situation. Here they are. these guys have this huge respect for Jesus, and he gets up and he starts doing this awkward, you know, this is just like, oh, this is just wrong. And, you know, they're all feeling awkward, but what do you do? Who's going to tell the master, no, you shouldn't be doing this? First of all, that's a little weird because, you know, you're telling him what to do when he's the master. And secondly, there's always this concern if you say, well, you shouldn't be doing this. He might say, well, then will you do it? No. Only one guy speaks up. And who is it? Well, of course, it's Big Mouth Peter. You know, he's always the one, isn't he? And so Jesus gets to him and Peter says, Lord, you will never wash my feet. This is just wrong. So Jesus says something interesting to him. He says, Peter, unless I wash you, you have no part with me. That is a profound statement. Because what Jesus is doing here is he's picturing something more important than just getting their feet clean. He's saying, Peter, what I'm doing for you right now, washing your feet, washing the dirt away, is a picture of my entire life. I am coming here humbling myself, lowering myself from my position of glory to be perceived as someone who's just a humble servant. And I'm going to do that to wash you so that you can be clean in God's sight. And in fact, the only way that you will ever be clean is if I do this for you. And you rely upon what I do for you, not upon your own ability to make yourself clean. Now, when Peter hears that, when Peter hears Jesus say, well, if I don't wash you, then you're going to have no part of me. He goes overboard. He says, well, okay, then wash my hands too, my head, you know, everything, you know. Give me a shower, do the whole deal. Well, you got to love Peter because, you know, at least he's all in, isn't he? Don't you love that about the guy? You know, it's like, well, if it's about having a relationship with you, Jesus, then I want all of it. I want everything you can give me. And so Jesus says, well, okay, that's good, Peter, but those who've had a bath only need to wash their feet. Their whole body is clean. Now, with that statement, some debate starts among theologians. Now, there are those who will come along and they will say, okay, well, so Jesus said, you know, I'm going to make you clean. I'm going to bring you forgiveness of sin. I'm going to wash your guilt away by what I do for you, serving you. And only your feet are going to be dirty. And so that means that you need to periodically just confess your sin. You know what? That's not what Jesus is teaching here. In fact, that's completely foreign to the context. And so I think we need to understand that what Jesus is saying is, I'm here to make you clean. Now, there's an interesting thing that when you study this passage, you will discover that literally the Greek text says a person who has had a bath that you are clean except for your feet. And the phrase except for your feet is not in all of the ancient texts that we have of the New Testament. It's in some of them, many of them, but not in all of them. And so there's a debate about whether that text, that phrase, was actually in the original text. I personally think it wasn't. I think that actually came in because some scribe who's copying the scripture somewhere along the line probably jotted that down to explain why Jesus was washing their feet. You know, if you have a bath, everything about you is clean, well, except for your feet, because you walked in the dirt, you know. He's not saying, oh, wait, you got to confess your sin. It's not what this is about. I think that's not even actually in the original text. And so what Jesus is saying is, if you've had a bath, you're clean. When I do what I'm going to do for you, you are clean before God. That's his message. Now, having said that, then Jesus then explained to his followers just exactly what this whole thing was about. That's what he's doing in verse 10. You're now clean. But then he says, now I want to apply what you've seen me do to your life. He says, okay, you've seen me wash your feet. You need to remember this. You call me teacher and Lord, and that is in fact what I am. You say I'm your teacher and your Lord. Well, what does that imply? Well, that implies that you will do what he says, right? You know, would someone be your teacher if you didn't listen to what they told you and you didn't do what they said? Suppose you decide you want to take up the game of golf and you just think, oh, okay, buy some clubs. I go out to the golf course and I go out and I shoot around. This is an easy game. You know, you tell all your friends, yeah, I shot one under par. Really? Your first time out? Yeah. Yeah, par's 120, isn't it? You know, no, par 72. Oh, maybe I need a little help here. You know, in fact, what I really did was hack up the course. So you go to a golf pro and you say, I need lessons. And so the pro says, okay, here's how you grip the club, you know, and you got this interlocking thing, and you would go do this, you know, and then once you've got that grip, then here's how you swing. And so you grip the club and you swing and you go, oh, man, that's terrible. That's awkward. I'm not going to do that. I'm doing it my way. Well, is that person your teacher? No, not at all. You're not listening to that person. Suppose that you don't have a Lord, but you have a boss, and your boss says on Friday, yeah, I'm going to need you to go on and come in on Saturday this week, and you say to him, forget you, dude. I'll tell you where you stick your going on to come in on Saturday. I'm not doing that. That's my day off. Forget you. Well, is he your Lord? No, he's probably not even going to be your boss because you're going to be fired. The boss, Lord, teacher, you do what they say. And so Jesus is saying, if I'm really your teacher and I'm really your Lord, then you need to do what I have just taught you. Not only with this action, but with my entire life that is depicted by this action. And what I'm teaching you is that you need to quit being obsessed with yourself and serve other people. Jesus, Philippians 2, tells us that he did not think equality with God something to be grasped. The Son of God, in this mysterious existence that God has, three personalities, three persons, one being, has equality with God the Father, the same glory, the same attributes. And Jesus, the Son, didn't consider it important for him just to hang on to being recognized as that, being given glory as that. He was willing to say, I'm going to go and be willing to be considered just a human being. I'm willing to go and live on this planet and not just be considered to be a human being, but to be considered an unimportant human being. And then to be considered as nothing unusual. And for even people in my own family to think I'm crazy, and for the religious leaders to think I'm not crazy, but I'm evil. And for people to reject him, Jesus said, I'm willing to go through all of that to serve you. And now I want you to do exactly that. You know, there are people in the church who have taken this passage and they've turned it into a ceremony. They have foot washing ceremonies. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. That's fine. But that's kind of what religious people have a tendency to do with things. God says, here's something to do. And they go, I know. Let's turn it into a ceremony. We'll do the ceremony and then we don't have to worry about the point. This is not about doing a ceremony. If you want to do a ceremony, that's fine. For those who do that, that's just fine. It's a way of reminding themselves. And that's just fine. But that's not the point. The point is about how you live. Live as a servant who's no longer concerned about himself. Jesus is calling us to quit the competition, to establish our own dignity, importance, pride, quit worrying about how we look, about what someone else might think, quit being sensitive to every perceived slight, quit serving ourselves and turn and glorify God like Jesus did by serving other people, even in the lowest of ways. That's the message. So how do we apply this to our lives? Well, first thing clearly is we must lose our obsession with self, which is something we all have. Paul wrote in Philippians 2, verses 3 and 4, he used the New American Standard version for this, so I think it captures the sense better. It says, "Do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but with humility of mind, regard one another as more important than yourselves. Do not merely look out for your own personal interests, but also for the interests." Wait a minute. I'm supposed to regard other people as more important than me? Why should that be? Why is somebody else more important than me? What am I, you know? Kind of like the bison dung we saw at Wild Animal Safari. I'm nothing in this world. I'm supposed to view myself that way? That's not what that passage means. Notice that Paul, in that passage, said in verse 5, "Have this attitude in yourselves, which was also in Christ Jesus." Did Jesus think of himself as nothing, as the equivalent of bison dung? You know, I'm worthless, I'm a worm. No, he knew exactly who he was. He's the Lord of all. This isn't about how you esteem yourself or your estimation of who you are. This is about what you choose to care about. So when he says, consider others as more important than yourself, he's not saying, well, other people are inherently more important than you and you're worthless. He's saying, choose to make their needs more important than your own. That's what he's saying. Because that's exactly what Jesus did. Jesus put all of his human needs and desires, the need for safety and for love and for affirmation and for life itself, he put them all aside to meet the needs of all of us. Our needs became more important to him than his own. And that's exactly what he's telling us we need to do. Romans 12:16 says an interesting thing. It says, "Live in harmony with one another. Do not be proud, but be willing to associate with people of low position." Why? Well, because we have this tendency to want to be around people who are powerful, who are influential, who are respected, who are attractive, who are winsome, who are rich. You know, you see crowds of people. You know, that's why at the hotel we were at in L.A., they had to have police to be there for security for the celebrity, because people want to be around them. They didn't want to be around me. You know, I'm nobody. You're going to have people go, "Oh, we get the police out. Rick Myatt's here. Wow." You don't see the homeless drawing crowds of people saying, "Oh, we just want to touch you. Can we have your autograph?" Why do we want to be around the people who are respected, who are powerful, who are attractive? Because we want something from them. We want to get some sense of our own value, or we want to get some advantage from being associated with them. Jesus is saying, this is a whole new way to live, where we quit worrying about that and we associate with lowly people, because that's somebody we can give to, and that's what we're called to do. There's a magazine published up in Portland, Oregon, very creatively titled Portland. 4 years ago, there was an article in that magazine in which the author described something that he had observed personally. His church has an outreach to homeless people in the city of Portland. Christmas Eve, they have a worship service, and then they have a meal of soup that they serve in a traditional soup kitchen for the homeless. And there's a really big homeless man there. They call him Big Ben. He shows up frequently at this church using their services. Well, on this particular Christmas Eve this author was writing about, they had a larger than unusual turnout on this Christmas Eve, and so the soup was running low. Big Ben showed up kind of late in the evening. It's about 9:30. As he got there, he got the last bowl of soup. Well, there was a young teenage boy there clearly homeless, looked like he'd been sleeping in mud, you know, disheveled and just looked awful. Well, he got there very late, and he got there too late to get any soup. And he just looked crushed. He sat down, obviously very hungry, and just kind of put his head in his hands because he wasn't going to get any soup. Old Big Ben had gone over and he sat down, was about to eat his soup when he noticed this kid. And he paused and then he walked over and he set his bowl in front of the kid, tousled his hair, started laughing, and walked out of the church. Doing exactly what he'd seen Jesus do in this passage. That kid's needs more important than mine. It's a guy named Brian Buehler, who's a pastor up in Vancouver, BC. He said he was pleasantly surprised when he went to the Vancouver area because the pastors in that area seem to have a real love for one another and support of one another. They prayed for one another a lot. And shortly after he'd gotten there, and he's in a church a lot like ours, one day an Anglican priest, Episcopal priest, showed up at their church. Now, this is a denomination that would be very different from our church. This guy shows up at his church, and he happened to be out. Buehler did. He said that the priest said, well, is Pastor Buehler in? The secretary said, well, no, he's out. He's going to be out all afternoon. The Anglican priest said, would you mind? I just came over to just say hi and kind of encourage him. Would you mind if I went into your sanctuary and prayed for him? Well, how do you say no to that? Oh, no, go ahead. Guy went into their sanctuary, knelt down by the pulpit, and for 20 minutes prayed for Buehler and for this, their church, and then he left. That guy said, I'm not about me and my ministry. I'm not about our denomination. I'm about the body of Christ, and I want these people who are God's people, I want to encourage them. Buehler said that he shared that story. The secretary told him about it when he came back, and he shared that story with his congregation. He said the people in his congregation often drive by that church, and he said now most of them, every time they drive by that church, they pray for that priest and that church. That's somebody saying, it's not about me. It's about serving other people. You know, we've had a couple of examples recently of some of you washing our feet. 2 years ago, my mother gave Lori and me a home theater sound system for Christmas. And it has a wireless subwoofer and wireless speakers that are in the back. And we love that thing, man. We love to crank it up. And my mom hates it, you know, but we love the boom, you know, it's really cool. So it's a great system, and about 2 months ago, the rear speakers all suddenly quit working. And we're pretty sure the speakers were blown or anything. It's just they weren't communicating with the system. There was some problem in there, and so I called the manufacturer, and they walked us through a bunch of things, and I started calling. I called their parts department. I called everybody going, and we went into Fry's, and we talked to them, and they said, oh, yeah, those wireless systems, that happens a lot. And we said, well, who can fix them? And they said, you know what? Don't even bother. It's useless. You might as well just buy a new system because it's going to cost way more to fix the system. And it was like, oh, great. You know, and so we thought, well, we're not going to do anything about it. Somebody in this church just said, oh, would you mind if I looked at your system? No, okay. Took the system. I didn't think anything would come of it. This guy called manufacturers, called parts makers, called all over the place. When we came home from our trip to Mississippi, we came back, we knocked on our house, and our sound system was there in our house. And it's working. He fixed it. And I'm not going to tell you who it was because he'll be inundated with people wanting him to fix his electronic equipment. You know what? He put in a lot of effort to fix that thing. When everybody said, forget it, it's hopeless, he fixed it. We're so happy. But what a kind thing to do. That is just somebody washing feet, isn't it? So that's what we're called to do. But in order to do that, we must have the right mindset. How are we going to do that? Well, first of all, we need to be secure in our identity. Look at verse 3. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power and they had come from God. You know what made Jesus able to not care if he's got the lowest position, not care if he's rejected by people, thought of as nothing? He knew who he was. He knew that God had put all things under his power and that he had come from God. He knew he is the Lord of all. So it doesn't matter how I look or what other people think, because I know who I am. Do you ever wonder how John knew that? How John knew that Jesus knew that that all things were under his power? I think John asked Jesus at some point, how in the world were you able to take such a humble role as washing our feet? And Jesus says, well, you know what, John? I knew that I'm the Son of God. I knew what I'm doing. So it's not a big deal. So for us who are followers of Christ, when we know who we are in Christ, when we know that we are loved by God and considered so much worth that he would give his Son for us, and that nothing will keep him from loving us, and that in his eyes we have infinite worth, when we count on that, and then it's not going to matter what other people think. That's where we start. Second thing, then, is we're going to need to know our mission. Jesus knew that the hour had come for him and that he was going to leave the world and go to the Father. He knew that he was about to finish the job. In fact, in John 17, verse 3, in verse 13, he said, praying to the Father, he says, I'm coming to you now. And in verse 4, he prayed this, I have brought you glory on earth by completing the work you gave me to do. He knew what the job was, and he was focused on that, and nothing would deter him from that. It helps us when we're focused on the mission. My mission isn't about promoting myself, protecting myself. It's not about pleasing myself. It's not making me happy. It's not making me comfortable. It's not making me rich. It is about declaring God's glory by serving other people. That's the mission. You know, I've had several people say to me lately that that they like Lori and me, but they never want to go on a trip anywhere with us because of our unfortunate history with airlines. On our recent trip to Mississippi, I thought it was going to happen again. We got down, boarded our flight, everybody were on the plane, ready to go, and the time for departure came and went. Oh no, we're sitting here in the plane, not going anywhere, this isn't good news. And finally, the pilot comes on the intercom, and as soon as he did, my heart sank. Because, you know, when you're sitting at the gate, and the pilots come on the intercom, they're never going to share good news. You know, have you ever noticed that? They never come on and say something like, you know, I know you may have noticed we're a little late. Well, the reason is because I've just been informed that this flight is our airline's 1,000,000th flight. And because of that, there's going to be a prime rib dinner for everyone on the plane, and they're loading the dinner on the plane as we speak. And oh, by the way, everyone on this flight is going to get a lifetime pass to fly anywhere they want for the rest of their lives on our airline for free. They never say that. They always say something like, oh, ladies and gentlemen, we have a little problem. We're delayed because there's a little mechanical issue. They put the engines in backwards. And so we're going to be here at the gate until everyone on the plane dies of old age. You know, it's always something like that. So the guy comes on, sure enough, says, well, we have a little mechanical problem. I thought, oh, no. Oh, here we go. Fortunately, it didn't happen. It was a minor problem. They got it fixed in a matter of 5 minutes and we were off. And the rest of our flights went pretty smoothly. But we had one funny little incident. as we were coming home. The first leg of our flight was from Meridian, Mississippi to Atlanta. And as we were going through TSA in Meridian, Lori, we had gone to Michael's base there in Meridian, the Naval Air Station in Meridian. We'd gone to the base exchange there, and Carissa and Michael bought some of Lori's favorite lotion that she loves as a gift for her. And she forgot she had it in her purse. You're going through TSA, and, you can't take this on the board. You got the lotion bomb right here, you know. Really? And Lori says, well, look, you know, this is a gift from my daughter and son-in-law. Could we just kind of, it's not a bomb. It's just, look, could I just carry it? No. We're going to have to throw it away. I'm sorry. Lori says, isn't there something you can do? And the TSA lady looks and she says, well, you have a carry-on bag right there, right? She said, you can put it in there and check the bag through. Okay, we'll do that. Yeah, there goes my alarm. Okay, so we do that. But the gal says, I'll need your ID and I will check the bag through. And then I'll bring your ID and the bag out to the plane. Okay, that's good. So Lori gives her ID, bag. She says, you go ahead and board the plane. We board the plane. We're sitting on the plane. As soon as we got on the plane, Lori said to the flight attendant, the TSA people have my ID, and I really need to get that because otherwise we're going to get hung up someplace because I've been in airports with someone who didn't have his ID before, and that's bad. Yeah. So, okay, well, we'll make sure that's okay. So we're sitting there, and we see the TSA agent actually brought the bag out to the plane, but not the ID. We thought, oh, no. Lori says to the flight attendant, please don't leave without getting my ID. You've got to get my ID. And so we sit there. We're waiting again, waiting and waiting. Finally, the pilot comes out of the cockpit, walks into the terminal, gets Lori's ID, and brings it back out. The pilot. That's not his job. His job is to fly the plane. But this pilot was focused on his mission. He said, my job is to get this plane to Atlanta, and I will do what is necessary to make that happen. So if it's a menial job, like get off the plane, walk in there, and get this lady's ID from a TSA agent, if that's what it takes, then that's what I'll do, because I'm getting this plane to Atlanta. Don't you love that kind of mission focus? Wouldn't it be great if we were all that way and we approached every situation when we're dealing with difficult people or difficult situations, or people are treating us unfairly or we're being ignored, and to say, that does not matter because my mission is to serve, and that's what I'm going to do. But one last thing we need to remember. That is, we must be confident in blessing. Did you notice the last verse? Now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them. We have a tendency to change that in our heads sometimes to, you will be rewarded if you do them. That is true, but that's not what Jesus said. He said, you will be blessed. The word that's translated blessed there, according to the theological dictionary of the New Testament, that word meant to have the transcendent happiness of a life beyond care. Jesus said, if you will do this, if you will focus on the mission of serving and not on yourself, you will have the transcendent happiness of a life beyond care. That's what he said. Our problem is that we think we're on this ladder and that we got to climb the ladder, go up to get the life that we want. You know, we have an equation, all of us in our heads, A plus B plus C equals the life that I long for, the fulfilling life. It equals happiness. And Jesus said, so we pursue A, B, and C, thinking we're going to get that. And here's what Jesus says. Jesus says, these things that I've just shown you, Quit being obsessed with yourself and serve others equals life transcendent happiness, life beyond care. The way up is down. If we want to go up to the life we long for, we go down the staircase by serving others. That is the message. Let's pray. Father, hard message to remember, and sometimes it doesn't feel like it to us. Boy, serving can be difficult. So often we've served and people just didn't seem to be at all appreciative of what we've done, and it's so frustrating. And yet, Lord, help us to remember that the truth is that we find life when we quit being obsessed with ourselves, when we become secure in your love for us, like Jesus was secure in who he was. We focus on the mission, and we give our all to serve you no matter what the situation, no matter what other people do, no matter whether anyone notices or not, whether we get credit or not. That's not the point. The point is just that we would love and that we would serve. Help us, Father, to live this out, to find the life that you have for us. Amen.